So, I didn't get very far. I live in Morro Bay now, grew up in Los Osos. But I did go away for a while, and I spent, it took a few tries. Kept on trying to leave town, and then I would end up back. It's that kind of place. So I came home one time. I was working over at the courthouse. I was just turned 19, and I would go over to the courthouse. I got off lunch, or get off about 3 in the afternoon. There was the coffee merchant up on Higuera and Santa Rosa. I would go over there every day like clockwork, open the paper, San Francisco Chronicle, have a cup of coffee, smoke 2 cigarettes, and then ride my motorcycle home. And it was a beautiful thing. And there was other people there. Sometimes my friend Liz Budd would join me. And, you know, we'd chat and stuff. But most of the time it was me and my newspaper. And there was another character, and I'm going to call him Bill, who was there every day. And some days he'd be sitting alone and he'd be reading a book. But more often than not, he had a group of people around him. He was a local raconteur. And so it would be undergraduates from Cal Poly or gutter punks. I actually once saw an extended member of my family hanging out with him, and they would sit there and tell all kinds of stories. And he was from Cayucas, and he also had tried to get out of town several times, and he would often tell these incredible self-deprecating stories about how he was attempting to leave the Central Coast on a 10-speed bicycle, and he got as far as Canada, and then he had to come home for some reason. And he was an incredibly bright and funny guy. And so I would kind of listen sometimes, when I was looking at the newspaper. And then every once in a while, I'd end up talking with him a bit. And then sometimes when it was just him, he'd really want some company. And so we'd have these long conversations about philosophy, German philosophy, a lot about how sometimes it's better to read novels about philosophy than to actually read Schopenhauer. And he was a huge fan of J.S. Bach, who had been writing a book for many years about him. But he was just this amazingly dynamic, fascinating character. And it was really wonderful to be 19 years old and to be taken seriously by somebody who was exactly twice my age, because Bill was twice my age. And so we would hang out there, and then it got to where we were taking walks around town. So we'd take walks around town, and we'd talk and smoke cigarettes and drink black coffee, and it was a beautiful thing, and it blossomed into a romance. And he lived in a little apartment above a bar, and we would go up and we would sit in these 2 recliners that he had set up in his apartment, and then the walls were covered in egg crate. And then there was a stereo right in the middle, perfect, symphonic, and we would listen to Bach's fugues and sometimes some Lou Reed and have ourselves a grand old time and make some dinner and drink a little wine. And he was very poor. He was incredibly, incredibly poor. But he was working on a book about J.S. Bach that would bring him the fame and the recognition as the genius that he wants. And that's pretty intriguing when you're 19, you know? And, my folks were not really keen on Bill. I think he might have been older than my stepdad. And you know, that's a story that you could tell. And if you said that now, and you said, oh, well, this was just some, you know, older dude who was, like, hitting on some 19-year-old girl. And, of course, I mean, that's how it is. That's the dynamic that's going on. He has all the power. She's just this naive young thing. But if at 19, I would have told you, you were full of it. Because these were 2 adult people who were hanging out and having a great time. So I stayed. And we were having a fine old time. But now I would say, yeah, that was part of the story. That was definitely part of the story. And And it was the fact that I was stuck on my own story about how things were is how it really devolved. Because you can be foolish at 38. You can be just as foolish at 38 as you are at 19. And now that I've been both, I can verify that. And one day he told me what his story was, about how he had met this young woman who had like revitalized his life, and it had inspired him back into writing this book that was the labor of a lifetime. And I hated that story. That was not the story that was going on. It was not the story that I was some minor character in the story where he was the hero, that I was an inspiration, a tool, a symbol of youth and freshness. I wasn't. I was the hero of my own damn story, and I had plenty of things to do, most of which was to leave the Central Coast by hook or by crook. Hard to believe, but I just had to get out. So when he told me what his story was, I said, no, that's not the story at all. That's not how that's going to go, and I left. And he was pretty hurt, because, you know, heartbreak is hard. And so we never really got to hang out ever again, and it was too bad, because we had ourselves a fine time. And I was hanging out up in Sacramento, where I lived for many years, and a friend of mine sent me a letter, Liz Budd, and we used to hang out up there at the coffee shop together. And it was a letter, and in it was a little piece cut out of the newspaper. And it was an obituary, and it just said that Bill had died. And that the circumstances surrounding his death were pretty tragic. He had he'd been a drinker all along, as you can imagine, and had a difficult life. Like I said, he'd been poor. He'd been a misunderstood genius for many, many decades. And he drowned in a creek in Cayucas about 3 miles from where he grew up. And I was sad. I was sad for all the years that we didn't get to hang out. But I thought, oh my gosh, I am so sorry he didn't know that. Because that is just the kind of gallows humor he most enjoyed. The idea that he would ignominiously die drowning in a creek 3 miles from his grandmother's house.